The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Lots going on today. Later on in the program, Jurgen Klinsmann will be joining us to reflect on Robert Lewandowski breaking Gerd Müller's record with his 41st league goal of the season. Bayern, of course, won the title a few weeks ago in Spain. It went right down to the wire, meanwhile. And it's Atletico Madrid who are the champions as they came from behind to beat Valladolid by 2-1. Real Madrid beat Villarreal, but in the end, 2 points separate the top two and Simeone's side are champions. Well, more on this, let's welcome in, shall we? Julian Laron and Ali Moreno. Ali, we said it. Easy isn't in Atleti's dictionary, and they made their fans sweat once again. Of course, they were down at the half, but in the end, it's the man of the moment, the man who has been the difference this season for them, Luis Suarez, who gets the winning goal.
And of all the things that we have seen in La Liga this season, this is the one thing that we knew for certain. This is the one thing that, you know what, if you want to bet the house on it, go ahead and do that. This was not going to be easy for Atletico Madrid, simply because it's what they do. It's who they are. The struggle for them seems to be a place of comfort. And so we saw a team in the first half that was passive, a little nervous, a little in between. Do we go and press? Do we really commit numbers forward? Do we want to get stretched? Because, oh, by the way, when we did get stretched, we went up on a set piece, and now all of a sudden we can't defend. And Valladolid is just going on the counter all by themselves and score a goal that would have put any other team in a very stressful position. As for Atletico Madrid, they were like, hey, this is it. We're home, baby. This is where it feels most comfortable, where we now have to come from behind. And if there was ever a sequence of play or a sequence of moments that tell you what this league has been all about, is that very sequence in the second half where Benzema has scored potentially the game-tying goal, and now all the pressure will be put back on Atletico Madrid. And while the referee is literally holding his hand and to his ear and giving one of these things, just kind of waiting to see whether VAR, while they're checking the goal on Benzema, whether they're gonna chalk it off or not, guess what? Angel Correa, simultaneously, he's scoring on a toe poke. And just think about how all of this could have changed. Had the goal by Benzema actually counted? Had the goal by Correa not gone in? What would have happened to the last 20, 25 minutes of the game? It didn't. The league didn't change. And in the end, Atletico Madrid, through Luis Suarez, as you just mentioned, in an unlikely goal from Luis Suarez because it was a breakaway goal, and we haven't seen Luis Suarez break away from anybody in about 5 years. Well, he goes on, breaks away from somebody, finishes, and is able to give Atletico Madrid the 3 points and, of course, the title. Well deserved for Atletico Madrid, but very much in the manner in which we expected them to win this game against Valladolid.
Nicely summed up, Jules.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, I thought the fact that Real Madrid went behind, this was the game where they could have put pressure on Atletico. If they had taken the lead against Villarreal, obviously the news would have gone into Valladolid and to the Atleti player and to Diego Simeone, and maybe then the pressure would have been higher. Instead, they went behind as well. So even when they were behind against Valladolid, the Atleti players knew that if it stayed like that, they would be champions. And they knew that also now they could start playing and now they could come back into the game. And I just thought once again, and it was disappointing from Real Madrid. Of course, they went on to win the game against Villarreal for nothing. But I thought the one thing they had to do, it starts well, is put pressure on Atleti to try to make them doubt and make them maybe drop those points that they badly needed. And yet, Real didn't do that. And on the other hand, Atleti, with everything that Ali said, Suarez, and just quickly for me, what sums it up is the Correa goal, because it's a bad first touch. It's a really bad first touch. And then he's got the talent and the magic of doing the little tricks, and then the top-hook finish a la Romario or a la Ronaldinho to score a goal that should not have never been scored, really. And for me, that's the season of Atleti. They should not have won the title this season, because they were not as good on paper as Real Madrid and Barcelona, but they took advantage of the poor seasons that both Barca and Real had.
And it's something that they are doing more and more, isn't it, Ali? You think back a decade ago, when those fights between Real Madrid and Barcelona, a draw was like a defeat almost, because they were just winning every single match. Simeone comes in and he's just turned this league on its head.
Yes, he has. And just think about where Atletico Madrid was when Simeone first came on. And I think the one thing that Simeone has done, take away the success, take away the victories, take away all the things that now we appreciate from Atletico Madrid, there needed to be a change in the mentality of Atletico Madrid to just be another team, and Real Madrid and Barcelona were always going to run away with titles. And they were just kind of there to give a little flavor and spice to the tournament, and that's it. And that's all they were going to bring in. Simeone comes in and says, you know what? How about we create our own identity? How about we create our own mentality? How about we start competing? How about we start challenging? And yes, you're good enough to do this, and we're going to do it our way. And it's not going to be similar to what they do. And they may not be nearly as pretty or entertaining, but it's going to be effective. And we're going to believe in the things that we're doing. And over the last decade, what you have seen from Atletico Madrid is that, at the very least, this is a team that is going to fight. At the very least, this is a team that is going to compete. And now they have good enough players to where it's not just about fighting, it's not just about competing, but then you're going to score the goals when you need to score the goals. So you're going to create chances when you need to create the chances. My only criticism of Simeone has been really that I just think that sometimes he sort of holds this team back, because he goes back to his very own nature, which is defensive, which is fighting, which is challenging, which is all this intensity and all this energy. But I think this team is better than that. And we have seen that at times this year. Not all the time, but at times this year. More importantly, when Barcelona and Real Madrid had a chance to win this title, they fell off the wayside. I mean, they went backwards instead of forward. And Atletico Madrid just kept going, just kept grinding. It seemed like they were collapsing, and they did not allow themselves to do that. Atletico Madrid, well-deserved champions of La Liga.
Could any other manager have pulled this off, Jules?
I don't think so. And for me, the big turning point of the season, which could have really killed the season, was that first leg against Chelsea in the Champions League. Because that back six that Simeone played, which was a disaster, which he was heavily criticised for on our show, but I think everywhere around the world, this could have really unravelled the season completely, derailed everything. Because as we said, they started so well. The first half of La Liga is fantastic. 50 points in 19 games. This is almost never seen before, certainly for Atleti. And yet that game, where he, like Ali said, where he went back, but to another extreme, to what he knows best, what he wants to do, super defensive, almost negativity in football, just not having the ball, just defending. I thought that could have had such a negative impact on his own team, such a toxic impact, that could really unravel everything else. And we saw at times that after that game, they lost a bit of grip, they lost confidence, they lost momentum completely. And then we thought at times, okay, maybe that game, really that game, has just destroyed everything that they did so well between September and February. And yet they found a way, he found a way of getting everybody again together, having that sort of mentality of like, let's not give this one away because we're in such a good position. And in the end, they did it. But I really thought that first against Chelsea could have destroyed everything.
Let's give Suarez some love, shall we, Ali?
Yes, we should. Yes, we should. And it's impossible. It really is impossible to give Suarez love and not say to Barcelona, yes, Ronald Koeman, great decision, buddy. Out of way to go. You need a goals. This guy scoring game-winning goals, championship-winning goals for another team, while you guys are floundering somewhere in third place. Luis Suarez is a guy, and we have mentioned it in the past, that you know he's going to bring you quality with his final touch. You know he's going to score goals. physically, he's right now in a place where it's difficult for him to compete in the same manner that he did in the prime of his career. And that's obvious, and nobody's gonna deny that. And yet, he manages to find those moments and those places inside the 18-yard box and the spots that he needs to be where he provides that final touch and that finish that puts Atletico Madrid over the top, that puts Atletico Madrid in a winning position. And he's done that so many times this year. We saw it early on, where every time that he touched the ball inside the 18-yard box, it seemed to be going into the back of the net. Then there was a moment in which he could not score. He was having difficulties, and so was Atletico Madrid. But in this last few games, where you needed somebody to score that game-winning goal, guess what? You turn to your goal scorer. You turn to the guy who knows what he's doing with that final touch. And while everybody else is freaking out, Luis Suarez is scoring goals. He's kissing his children. He's giving one of these, mwah, mwah, mwah. Yeah, that's right. We're the champions. And Barcelona, not so much.
There's a brilliant video that has gone viral, Jules, of him sat on the pitch, FaceTiming, you assume is his family, just emotionally gone, just crying his eyes out.
Just imagine that less than a year ago, he was told by Ronald Koeman, we don't need you here, we don't want you here. Imagine how he must have felt after giving all those years, all those goals, third top goal scorer in Barcelona history, and now you're told that you're useless, that you're not good anymore, that you're not good enough anymore. And he must have cried. I'm sure he cried when he had to leave Barcelona, he had to leave Leo Messi. And now, less than a year later, he's having his revenge. This is a revenge on Koeman. This is a revenge on Barcelona. It's a revenge on Bartomeu. It's a revenge on all the people, and me included, who didn't believe he could do this at Atleti, but suddenly a revenge on, like, oh, you thought I was not good enough anymore. Mm. Look what I did. I scored 21 goals and I took this team to the title. And I think that's the sweetest of revenge. And you can understand the tears. And today the tears were of joy. Less than a year ago, they were of sadness.
From a Real Madrid perspective on this title race, Ali, it's difficult to put any sort of argument towards the fact that they deserve to win it.
Well, I can just tell you this. We know that Zinedine Zidane has had an incredible managerial career with Real Madrid and has won everything there is to win. And yet, this season, where they didn't win anything, in my opinion, may just be Zinedine Zidane's best managerial job with Real Madrid. The reason I say that is because this is a team that had no business whatsoever to be in the position that they were today, with a possibility, with a chance of winning La Liga. How many times did we watch this team play this season and we said to ourselves, man, that is the worst Real Madrid team I've seen play in a long, long time. Look at the lack of depth that this team has. Look at the lack of players and the injuries and COVID. And these things just kind of kept happening time and time and time again and building up. And somehow they found themselves in a position where they still had an opportunity to win it in the last day of the season. That in itself is an accomplishment. I know that for Real Madrid fans, that's not enough. And that's not the standard. And yet, in terms of the job that Zidane has done with this group of players, I think it's as good a job as he has done with Real Madrid. I really do think that this was, in terms of a managerial position, an outstanding job from Zinedine Zidane in keeping this team together, barely as they did throughout the course of the season, to have an opportunity in the end. Obviously, they came up short. Real Madrid fans should now look into the future and think, well, if Zidane is walking out that door, and this group of players doesn't seem to be getting any younger, what's happening? What is the future, and what does the future look for us? The immediate future, not so great. Long-term future, it depends on the decisions they make with personnel.
Isn't it funny, Jules? Ali brings up the point, obviously, despite La Ligas and Champions Leagues, Zinedine Zidane doesn't get the credit that others do. You know, he's a cheerleader, blah, blah, blah. But that rhetoric is clearly, you could hear it change this season, a season where he won nothing.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? And I think he would, obviously he would swap a blank season, the first one, by the way, in the club for the club since 09-10. He would swap that for even a Copa del Rey or for something, of course. But I think he would have learned so much from this season in terms of him as a manager, in terms of tactics, in terms of managing his own dressing room, whether you've got big stars or not, aging players or not, the relationship with the press, because for the first time this season, we've seen him at times really angry, asking for respect, asking for time, asking to let this dressing room in peace. And this is not the Zidane that we've seen before. But yeah, I agree with Ali. This is, for me as well, his best season as a manager, because let's not forget the semi-final of the Champions League, where they were still very much in it in the second leg away at Stamford Bridge until Mason Mount's second goal for the Blues. But he was there. He had no right to take this team all the way to the semi-final of the Champions League. Same in La Liga, to take all this team all the way to the last day of the season to still win La Liga. And I think it's great. I really believe today was his last game as a Real Madrid manager. I think he won't be there next season. He might come back in the future, but not next season for sure. And I think that whoever gets him next will be very lucky.
Juventus, Jules?
I think Juventus, yeah. I don't know if it's as early as next season and coming in this summer. Although I know he wants it, and the rebuilding project at Juventus doesn't scare him whatsoever. He's very attached to Italy, to Juventus. It's a country and a league where he wants to coach. And at Juventus, there's the French national team job as well that will come up at some point later, I think, in his career. But I think he will be ready to go straight into another job next season. And I believe that Juventus will certainly be his favourite.
Thank you very much, Jules and Ali. Meanwhile, take a look at what happened at the bottom of the table. Eibar already down. Valladolid and Huesca will be joining them in the Segunda Division next season. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Final day of the Bundesliga, and it was emotion. All round, we saw some big names leaving. David Alaba, Boateng and Martinez, of course, due to leave the club in the summer. This was Boateng coming off. You can just see hugs all round with everyone on the bench, all the staff as well. You think this is a player who's been here for 10 years on the Bundesliga, 9 times. For Alaba, he eclipses that as well. 13 years with the club, 14th most all-time appearances for Bayern, 10 league titles, 2 Champions League wins as well for Alaba. Of course, it looks like he's on his way to Real Madrid. And there'll be another departure as well, Javi Martinez leaving. But of course, the big story was a man who is very much staying, and that is Robert Lewandowski, who in the 90th minute finally got — the whole game was about Lewandowski trying to get the goal that would break Gerd Müller's record. In the end, he did it to make it 5-2. And you could just see the appreciation and the love all around, not only from the players, but he went to the bench as well to thank the staff on this incredible record that Lewandowski went on to break. This is what he had to say about it, as we can just see the trophy lift. And Manuel Neuer, they're giving it to Alaba, to Boateng and to Martinez as they lift in yet another title. But for Lewandowski, of course, it was all about breaking Gerd Müller's record. 41 league goals in the season. This is what he had to say after the game.
Robert, congratulations. A big hand for you. I mean, that's a special day. That's an historical day for German football, for the Bundesliga, and especially for you. Please let us know about your emotions right now.
It's difficult to say about my emotion because I'm very happy, I'm very proud. Also that I wanted to dedicate this goal, the last one, for my mother because she has today the birthday, and also to Hansi Flick and all the staff, team, because they did amazing job. We work together, amazing performance. We did amazing performance since Hansi Flick is here, so that was something special also for me, also for us as a player. So now I'm feeling great, and I don't know exactly what I did maybe yet, but I'm very proud, I'm very happy, and emotions are very high.
If you look back, being a young child playing football in a courtyard, have you ever dreamt about something like this?
I have to say that I never dreamed about to break this record, to score more as 40 goals. Because I thought that is impossible if you have only 34 games, and I played 29 games. So that's why I don't believe it still what I did. But I think on this all game that I scored in the last seconds, not only minutes, the last minutes, that I was trying before 3, 4, 5 times to score either the one goals, but I couldn't. And the last situation came and I scored the goal. That is something special, something historic. And you know that I still don't believe, but maybe tomorrow, maybe even 1, 2 weeks later, I'm understood what I did.
Okay, that's my question. I mean, you scored literally in the last second. Why did you create so much drama for us?
If you want to break so legendary record, maybe you need this drama. I don't know, I cannot explain, because sometimes you cannot understand exactly football. And today that was, I had a few situations, and I was in myself, inside, I was laughing because I couldn't imagine why I cannot score the goal either. But sometimes it's going to be happening like this, and maybe this record needed maybe this drama too as well. And I don't know, I cannot explain, but in the end I score one goal and I break this record. So, you know, to break this amazing record for me, it means a lot. And that's why I'm very proud and how I say happy as well.
Just 1 second, because would you like to say something to Gerd Müller? I would like to know this.
Yeah, for sure. I have the big respect for him, what he did, how kind of person he was, because I heard a lot about him, and I'm sure that he's proud of me as well, because he know and he understand for sure what does it mean to score so many goals. And this record belongs also to my team, and that's why if I'm talking about Gerd Müller, I know how big player he was, how big person he is, and what does it mean for them, for the football, for the history in football. And that's why that's mean more for me as well, to be there on the same level and to score so many goals as him. So that's make me proud, and I'm very happy that I can stay on the same table with him. But I know he's only one, Gerd Müller, and also it's only one Lewandowski, and that's why I'm very happy. And also congratulations to him, because that was also some kind of inspiration to break this record for me, and that's why I know it, that it's some kind of record to break this, and without him maybe that will be impossible.
Well, for more on this achievement, let's welcome in, shall we, Gab Marcotti and Jürgen Klinsmann. Jürgen, he averaged a goal every 60 minutes.
It's just simply unbelievable what Robert Lewandowski kind of did this season. I mean, 29 games, 41 goals. Bayern Munich scored all season 99 goals. So it's pretty much every second goal is scored by Robert Lewandowski. I mean, he has amazing players around him, like Thomas Müller, for example. I think Thomas Müller did 21 assists this season. So they're feeding him the right way. But what Robert achieved is just a huge, huge milestone. It's a big piece of history in German football, because Gerd Müller simply means so much to everyone in German football. He's a real legend. I mean, he built basically this club, Bayern Munich, with all of his goals that he scored in the 70s and 80s. So everybody admires really Gerd Müller. And the way that Robert Lewandowski did it throughout the entire season, with so much respect, always talking about his idol, Gerd Müller, the inspiration that Gerd Müller gives him, that is That is outstanding, and the words that he just found right now in this interview is fantastic. So you got to give Robert really the biggest compliment in the world. Huge congratulations on this record. And hopefully he keeps going for another couple of years and challenges now his own record.
Jürgen, how's he done this? Because he seems to be getting better with age.
To do this, obviously, you need tremendous focus. You need tremendous hunger. And this is what Lewandowski is all about. He's hungry for every next moment. He never is satisfied. He scores the first goal, he goes for the second one. If he scores a second one, he wants badly the third one. So this hunger drives him week in, week out. I wish him that he gets a huge achievement with his Polish national team as well. Maybe this is happening this summer with the Euros. This is something that you wish a player of his charisma, of his standing, you wish also the biggest success on a national team level. You know, like a Ronaldo did win the European Championship. We all waiting still for Messi winning a World Cup with Argentina. So when you watch Robert Lewandowski over the last couple of years, you really kind of feel for him and you wish him the biggest success with Poland as well, which has actually a very good team at the moment. But to break that record and to be so consistent and to be also always a team player, because he's not only, you know, scoring all these goals with the left foot, right foot, the headers, penalties, free kicks, he's so complete in his game. No, he works a lot for the team. He comes back, he helps out, you know, when the opposing team has a corner kick, a free kick, he's there helping out. Then he's running up front again and he's trying so hard for everyone to do his best. So this is huge. This is a huge achievement.
Meanwhile, Gam, a lot of familiar faces to us when you take a look at Bayern Munich, of course, won't be there next season, the likes of Boateng, Alaba, or indeed Martinez as well.
Yeah, and look, inevitably, one of the ways that Bayern has stayed ahead of the curve, it's they've also managed their departures. They've been pretty strict in terms of the wages that they pay. And, you know, a guy like David Alaba, who's been there his entire career, his contract was winding down and, you know, he basically said, I'd like one last big payday and also experience a different kind of football, which I think, as you mentioned, is why he's heading to Real Madrid. I think with Boateng is a bit different. Again, older player, is going to cost you more money if you renew him. And that's why they made the decision for Dia Upamecano. Javi Martinez, let's not forget, Javi Martinez was supposed to leave last summer. In the end, he stuck around simply because they were short on bodies. He's two. It's easy to forget about him because he's been injured and we haven't seen that much of him. But, you know, he had a couple seasons where he was absolutely instrumental for Bayern, playing both in central midfield and occasionally at the back as well.
Not just the last game for those players, but also the manager, Jürgen. What an appointment Hansi Flick proved to be and how much they might miss him.
Yeah, and this is an amazing story that Hansi Flick really wrote over the last 2 years. You know, coming in as an interim coach, you know, and he has been obviously the assistant coach to Joachim Löw with the German national team. Obviously, he coached himself also as a head coach before. He built kind of the Hoffenheim, where the Hoffenheim is today. That has a lot to do with Hansi Flick. But they came at the right time. He connected with the players perfectly. His way of communication that suits everyone within the club. And off he went, you know, and won seven titles in 2 years. This is crazy. This is amazing. So now he uses this opportunity. He wants to take that opportunity to take the German national team over because Joachim Löw announced that he steps down after the Euros this summer. And it looks pretty much a deal done with the Federation. So you can only wish him best of luck for his new adventure. But what he achieved in the last 2 years with Bayern is just unbelievable.
Meanwhile, Borussia Dortmund with a win today, meaning they'll finish third, Jürgen. What a season it's been for Dortmund. Of course, Erling Haaland very much grabbing the headlines. 41 goals in all competitions.
Yeah, I mean, Borussia Dortmund is a very, very interesting example for how the entire Bundesliga season really kind of went. First, they did so well. Then they decided to let the coach go. Interim's coach comes in with Edin Terzic. Then they decide suddenly to take Marco Rose at the end of the season. Basically, that gave a turmoil. Then, you know, they went downhill. Then they caught the kind of themselves, you know, back on the right track. They finished now strongly. So it's a real roller coaster season for Borussia Dortmund. Fascinating to watch. But you got to give Edin Terzic a huge compliment, how he kind of then steadied the ship and got him in the right direction and now finished the season on third place in the Champions League ranks, which a couple of weeks ago we all thought they might not making it in the Champions League, which would have been a huge disaster for Dortmund because of the money that is involved in the Champions League. So obviously the real story is Erling Haaland. Erling Haaland scoring, I think, 27 goals in the Bundesliga alone, and in the other competitions, 14 more. It's huge. I mean, it's just for such a young player, it's a tremendous achievement, and we only kind of can hope that he continues his path like that and entertains us for many years to come.
Jan keeps telling us that he's going to stay. Gab, is that what you're hearing as well?
I mean, it's a good question. I think Erling Haaland would certainly like to stay because it's in his interest to stay for another season of development in the Bundesliga. But more importantly, a year from now, that release clause kicks in. And, you know, the simple fact of the matter is when you have a release clause, we think it's about 70, 80 million euros. Jan thinks it's a little more. But when you have a release clause that's less than what you're worth on the open market, because most would agree that it's probably in the 120, 130, maybe more million range right now, you as a player, you have all the leverage because, you know, you can negotiate better terms for yourself. There's more clubs that could come and get you. And your agents can negotiate better terms for themselves. So there's a weird situation right now where, from a purely financial perspective, if you're Dortmund, you would much rather sell him now, best of all would be getting him to commit to a new deal and remove the release clause. That's not going to happen. Erling Haaland and his dad and his agent hold all the cards here. So I certainly would expect him to stay another year.
Just a last word on Terzic. He can't go back to being an assistant, can he, Jürgen? You don't need that. You've just won the cup with Dortmund. You won 7 in a row to book a place in the Champions League. And then you have to go back to being an assistant coach. I can't imagine that anyone particularly would want that.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult now for Edin Terzic, to be honest, because obviously you proved the point. You proved that you can be a head coach, that you can kind of guide a team on the inside. You can also represent the club on the outside. And he's done a tremendous good job. You know, now coming in, obviously, with Marco Rose, the head coach from Borussia Mönchengladbach, who today basically, yeah, unfortunately, didn't make it, not even in European competition, not even in a newly created European Conference League. So Edin Terzic looks like he's done really amazing and he deserves more than being just an assistant coach. I'm pretty sure over the next couple of weeks there are coming offers for Edin Terzic and he can actually choose, maybe it's Eintracht Frankfurt, for example, or whoever looks now for a new coach that is in a mix of these positions. And I can only guess, but I would guess today that he will find a team.
Meanwhile, let's take a look at the bottom of the table, shall we? We know Schalke, of course, have been down since before Christmas. However, Werder Bremen, not many would have had them going down at the start of the season, getting relegated for the first time in over 40 years, Jürgen.
Yeah, this is the real drama, but this is the drama about promotion relegation. And this is has been such an exciting race the last couple of weeks or months, you know, where you would have expected maybe being a Mainz in there. Obviously, Bielefeld always expected to be in that battle. But who would have ever expected that Schalke is in that from the beginning on, from day one on of the season. And then Cologne joined in, then Werder Bremen joined in, Hertha Berlin joined in into the relegation battle. Basically teams that you expect in the top 10 of the Bundesliga. So it's been a real, real drama. And what happened today, basically just a couple of minutes before the end of the last game, with Cologne scoring their winning goal, put Bremen down. They're down now. This is a shock. It's a shock for an entire city, for the entire environment, the club. I mean, they're all speechless probably there. They're crying there. Meanwhile, you know, Cologne took the last chance to pull themselves up, you know, to the third last place, which gives you their playoff game now against the third top team from the second division. But this is real drama. But a team like Werder Bremen should never, ever have gone down in the second Bundesliga, nor obviously Schalke 04.
So the Bundesliga season is over. 24 hours time, the Italian season will be over as well. And of course, it's all about who will be plying their trade in the Champions League next season. If Milan beat Atalanta and Napoli beat Verona, then it will be those two teams who finish in the top four. Juve will have to make do with the Europa League spot. But of course, if Milan or indeed Napoli drop points, then it would be Juve, if they beat Bologna, who would move up into the top four. Gab, what's the main story like going into this final round of matches involving these three teams?
Well, look, I mean, obviously, with Milan dropping points against Cagliari, there is a certain insecurity around Milan. Everybody remembers that Atalanta beat them 5-0 in the reverse fixture. Everybody knows that on Wednesday night, Atalanta losing the Coppa Italia final. Maybe they feel like they have something to prove. And I think also, you know, there's some financial imperatives here as well. Between the extra prize money that they would get for finishing second, and because of the way the dynamics work with the Champions League prize money, Atalanta would get an extra 10 million euros if they win this game and they finish second, which, you know, to a team like Atalanta with their budget, that is a lot of money. So Milan certainly aren't taking this for granted. Obviously, no Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I think it's going to come down to who they line up with up front. The latest suggestion is they might go with Rafael Leao rather than Ante Rebic, but it's all TBD.
On paper, obviously, it makes sense. Atalanta going for the win to get more money, Jürgen. Does that resonate with players, though, that much?
No, it doesn't. To be honest, it doesn't. It does certainly with the people that run the club and they make their projections and their plans for budget-wise for the next season. But I think, you know, what Atalanta already this year proved is just a top class. You know, with Gasperini guiding this team kind of from height to height, they are so hungry. They are every couple of days, they are ready to prove a point. They have this attitude of giving always everything they have, you know, and that's why I think, you know, Milan, AC Milan will have huge, huge problems in this game against Atalanta. I think that Napoli and Juventus will do their job. They're going to win their games respectfully, but I think that AC Milan will have big problems with Atalanta, and I could imagine actually that Atalanta is going to win this game.
Wow, thank you very much, guys. What an afternoon it is going to be. It's one, of course, you can follow live on ESPN+. We'll be showing Milan against Atalanta. Join us at 2 o'clock for a build-up to all the games. Plus, we'll be cutting in, of course, to all the relevant goals from the Juve and Napoli match as well. It's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow afternoon. Be sure to join us.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Sunday, of course, the last round of action in England. It's all about qualification for the top four. Two spots remaining. If Chelsea and Liverpool win, then that should be enough to see them in the Champions League next season. Leicester, though, of course, waiting to pounce if any teams do drop points. Gab with us, Craig Burley joins the show as well. Craig, out of all of those matches, which do you think is the trickiest?
Well, I would say Leicester's is the trickiest in terms of, you know, Tottenham's league position. But then again, they probably are going to have to rack up, as we have mentioned several times during the week, they're probably going to have to rack up a big score. Are they capable of doing that? Yeah, I mean, it could happen depending on what happens at Anfield. I mean, Liverpool playing Crystal Palace, who are losing their manager, who are have lost, what, 5 of the last 7? So, barring a disaster, you would have to think Liverpool are going to get the job done. Some fans back in at Anfield as well to see them possibly end a difficult season in the Champions League. As I said yesterday's show, I don't think Chelsea's game is simplistic. He's got some thinking to do with one or two players that have been carrying knocks. Then he has a week between, or 6 days between the Champions League final. But he can't really afford to rest players because he has to take care of business for himself. And Aston Villa are a decent side this year. Don't forget, they stayed up last year by a point. But it's been a whole different story for them this year. They're a big threat. They can score goals. It wouldn't be a shock to see them get a result against Chelsea. So I think Chelsea have to make sure they take care of business. But I think Leicester have the biggest task, bearing in mind we expect Liverpool to win.
How do you see it all playing out, Gab?
Well, I completely agree with Craig. You know, Chelsea may have an extra point in the table, but it's pretty much meaningless because they have to take the pitch, assuming that Leicester and Liverpool are going to win. And it just shows you how big their defeat to Arsenal, you know, in that crazy game, how big that defeat looms, because that's pretty much would have made the difference here. I think it's tough. Grealish is likely to be available for Villa as well. I still have Chelsea winning, but I think it's going to be extremely close. Leicester, I think they need, a four-goal swing to get past Liverpool if they both win. I don't think that's going to happen. That's a really, really big ask because, you know, effectively you're talking about winning by five or six goals realistically. And, no, that's tough even given the current state of Tottenham.
Great stuff, guys. As always, thank you very much. A lot more from Gab and Craig on Extra Time, which you can check out over on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It has been one of the closest races in France for years. Lille, of course, had the chance to wrap it up last week. Blew that opportunity, could only manage a 0-0 draw. Just keeping PSG that little bit of hope that maybe they can retain the title. Well, for Lille, they beat Angers and it's done. They will be champions of France. If not, though, PSG would defend their title in the most unlikeliest of fashions. Jules back with us. Jules, how are Lille?
They're shaky, I can tell you that from what I'm hearing. They're confident that they can do it, and they should be because they've been brilliant all season. But a lot of that team, a lot of those players are not used to this situation where it's 90 minutes, that's it, and then you need to win, that's it. Nothing else will do. Well, you can if PSG don't win, but you have to go in expecting that PSG will win against Brest, and you have to do it. And we saw the pressure getting to them last weekend against Saint-Etienne, and they were at home this time. So you can just imagine the pressure going away at Angers on them on Sunday night, and I still think they will do it, but they certainly can feel the pressure right now. Whereas for PSG, I think they'll be more used to it, and they will handle the situation maybe a bit better, but it might just not be enough.
Julian Rom, thank you very much. Just a reminder, a lot more from Jules on the Gab and Jules podcast. It will be a big one, I imagine, on Monday. Be sure to check it out. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who is watching. Congratulations to Zeke, who got married today. What a moment. He was behind the scenes on the show. Stay tuned. Extra Time is next with Gab and Craig. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. What are you looking around for, Craig? What are you looking for?
My phone was buzzing.
Oh, it was calling
down here.
You, Stevie. Very...
No, but yeah. Get me a tea time. Who's playing? I can't sign on the tea sheet. I can't access the tea sheet. Tell the lads I'm playing. God. Hey, by the way, do you like my decorations on my...
Oh, I haven't seen it. Let's have a look. What is it? A cup.
No, there isn't any.
No, there definitely is. There's some sort of cup or candle there. What's that?
Yeah, that's always been there.
Oh, I see.
I'm not going to decorate it.
Oh, because people want you to have a little bit more life behind you, and now obviously people have asked that, you will go completely the other way because you're stubborn ways.
No, just completely opposite way because I can't be asked.
Yes, yes.
Basically.
Exactly. Right. Which is worse, Griezmann going to Barca to win La Liga and not winning it, Gab, or Barca letting go of Suarez because they had Griezmann and Suarez winning La Liga?
I actually think Griezmann going to Barcelona is worse because, look, and I know I'm going to sound like Mr. Contrarian here and the facts prove me wrong, but from Barcelona's point of view, and I think people don't fully understand this in part because the Catalan press is like, oh, look, here we go. We're going to bring back Neymar. We're going to sign Mbappe. We're going to sign Haaland. They simply couldn't afford to keep Luis Suarez. Now, could they have not let him go to Atletico Madrid? I think they certainly thought he wasn't going there. I think they thought he was going to go to Juventus. And then, of course, he pulled the old switcheroo. And the rest, as they say, is history. The Griezmann deal for me, though, is worse because you were spending an enormous amount of money on a guy who admittedly is very good, but it's still a guy in his late 20s and it's still an enormous amount of money, and you still have serious compatibility issues with Lionel Messi. And I think that's part of the reason why we haven't seen the best of Antoine Griezmann since he moved to the Camp Nou.
Craig, who do Spurs hire to start this rebuild? Can they turn Dele Alli into what his potential was previously?
Well, I think Daniel Levy would be hoping so, and get a very sellable asset again, if that's the case. I mean, obviously, Dele Alli's up the spout for an England place now with the season he's had, you would imagine, barring a surprise selection. Who do they get? I think that's a tough one. Rodgers at Leicester has said he's got no interest at the moment in moving. I'm sure that would only change if the right club come along. Graham Potter's name from Brighton has been mentioned. I actually like what he's done a lot at Brighton. I mean, if Brighton, it's all ifs and buts, but some of their football this year, particularly early in the year, was excellent. But they were a bit lightweight up front and didn't finish teams off. And that's why they hovered around the relegation zone for as long as they did. I think they had a lot of draws, but his football, and I think the way he goes about it is really, really good. And that could alert some other clubs, whether it's Tottenham, I don't know, but I think they might go down, whether it's somebody from England or abroad, I think they may go down that kind of route for a younger guy and try and just take a longer term. Well, I think they should take a longer term approach.
Who are they going to get, Gab?
Even judging by the names with which they've been linked, it just seems like a complete scattergun approach. Recently we dealt with this on the Gavin Jewell show, where the three most recent names again were Erik ten Hag, who's, I think he's re-upped with Ajax or is in the process of doing so, Ralf Rangnick, which basically means you have to hang the whole kit and caboodle over to him sort of for the next 3 years, even though the man is a genius. I don't think it's what Spurs need right now. You're getting linked to names like, oh, the other one is Roberto Martinez, who I think is an excellent manager, but you wouldn't be getting him until the middle of July, because obviously he's with Belgium at the Euros. So it seems like a complete scattergun situation. Obviously, as Craig said, Brendan's turned them down. I think Graham Potter's a great manager. But again, at Brighton, he's got a whole structure with a real live director of football who does his recruitment for him. You feel like you go to Spurs and it's just Levy. And I think that's one of the main problems that they have. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Nuno gets linked to Spurs simply because of the influence that Jorge Mendes still has over the club. So I have no idea what Levy's planning. My guess is that he's waiting for some financial clarity And I think first and foremost, he's trying to sort out the Harry Kane situation.
Craig, how difficult is it for players to switch focus from club football to international football and adjust with teammates, coach, playing role, or style within a short span of time?
It's actually not that difficult. You just, you know, at the end of the day, when you go away with a national team, you meet up, you have a structure within that national team. If the manager has been there for a while, and most of them have, like Gab mentioned, Roberto Martinez, you know, Southgate's been with England a while, you know, Mancini's been in Italy now for a decent amount of time, so feet under the carpet there. So you kind of know what you're going into. It depends if a manager tinkers with formations. From my experience, we didn't. We pretty much under Craig Brown for numerous years played a 3-5-2. So you knew what you were coming into. Everyone knew their job. And so that was one of the things that helped us get to major championships. I think if you're going in and you're a manager's, you know, tinkering from one international to another with different formations, different personnel, all these things, it can add to the pressure. But I think as a player, it's just something that you adapt to. You go in, it's a different pressure, you have less amount of time. You get in, you do the job or you don't do the job. You get hammered or you don't get hammered by the press, and you get out and you go back to your club. And then you go back to your day-to-day business. That's just the way it is. So it's for the bigger players, it's not really an issue.
To Gab, does Ronaldo stay at Juve if they fail to secure top four tomorrow? If yes, would it make sense for him to only stay for the last year of his contract to play in the Europa League? Or if he only stays, he extends his contract with Juve?
So I don't think it would make any sense for Juve or indeed for Cristiano to extend his contract right now, unless he's willing to take a gigantic pay cut, which he really should be. If you're Cristiano, you know that you've proven this season, even with all the difficulty, you can still perform. So you're better off playing a season and see where, if you are going to stay, see where the team are for now. Obviously, there's talk of him moving on. It's not just the Europa League factor. You know, it's also the idea that Juventus are in the process of transition. They were going to transition with Cristiano, but obviously, given their financial situation, even if they qualify for the Champions League, you know, they're going to be able to invest less on the team if Cristiano's there, because lest we forget, he makes something like around about $65 million a year, which is a ton of money. That said, Juventus have said that, you know, if Cristiano wants to leave, they might not necessarily stand in his way, but they would expect to get 25 million euros back for him, which is a big number, given Cristiano's age and given the fact that then whoever takes him has to pay Cristiano. I think given everything he's achieved in his career and for the club and the inevitable backlash that follows one way or the other, if you're Juve, the smart thing to do here is say, listen, Cristiano, it's 100% up to you, stay or leave. If you stay, we honor your contract and we're psyched that you're with us. If you want to leave, we totally understand. Whether it's back to Sporting Lisbon in a fairy tale, whether it's Manchester United, wherever you want to go, we won't stand in your way one way or the other. I think that's really the only rational thing Juve can do right now.
Craig, your thoughts on the UEFA Conference League. Is the competition really needed, or is it just UEFA getting money? Besides fans of the clubs, who else is going to watch it?
Well, somebody's going to have to... Gab, over. This is where I go.
Yeah.
Over to you.
I'm happy that you are, because I am happy to cheerlead for the UEFA Conference League. Look, when what you said there, you know, other than the fans of the club, who's going to watch it? Well, the fans of the clubs, the fans of all those clubs who aren't good enough, who, you know, go out in the qualifying rounds of the Europa League, these guys still want to play European football. And you could say, well, me as a fan, I don't care because I want to watch the Champions League. I want to watch Real Madrid and Man City. And that's fine. But, you know, especially given the direction of travel in recent years has been so heavily skewed to the big five leagues, this was created for everybody else. This was created for all those teams in the Czech Republic, in Hungary, and throughout Scandinavia, who, you know, realistically don't have a prayer of qualifying for the Champions League proper. And if they go in the Europa League, they get tanked by mid-table Spanish or English sides. And so, you know, the next level down, for them, it's important for their football to go to play conference games. It's important for them to have midweek football. I know people are going to get snooty about it, and you know we're all going to laugh at the poor sucker from La Liga or the Premier League that got stuck playing in the Europa Conference and whatever. But again, it's not for them. If these guys all get knocked out straight away, nobody's really going to care. And the way it's going to work commercially is they'll make their money in their local markets mostly, because you know these aren't insignificant markets, and they're. Many of these teams have many fans who actually want to watch their team play, and they know it's not the Champions League, and they're okay with it. But I'm sure we'll get a lot of condescending stuff from the punditocracy, but I think it's a good thing, personally.
Do you see why I passed that over there, Daniel?
I know. That was very good. That was...
I will be honest with you. I know it's happening. I have not read into enough about how they've structured it, primarily because it's not... up the pecking order at the moment in terms of what we are doing. So I really don't know, how, apart from what Gab just said there, how it's all going to work and how it's going to affect the Europa League and everything else. But we'll see. We'll see when it all kicks off, and we'll have a good look at it, and then we'll decide. These games will be played on a Thursday, and I'm still going to be off on a Thursday.
Yes, I think it will definitely coincide with your day off.
Are the games going to be played on a Thursday?
Yeah, I think they are, aren't they, Gab? They're Thursday?
Yeah, they'll be competing with the Europa League for Craig's attention, but it won't matter because he'll be off because it's Thursday.
There you go.
Checker me, it's Thursday, no coincidence.
Craig, who's the signing of the season, Ruben Dias or Luis Suarez?
I think I've always liked Suarez, don't get me wrong, but I think Ruben Dias has been just terrific. I mean, he could be a Champions League winner. And around a week's time, they've already lifted the Premier League trophy. He has absolutely solidified that back line. He's been a real leader in there. Don't forget, they lost the influential leadership of Vincent Kompany. That was a big problem for them. They've had John Stones, who's had injury and off-field issues. Their defence has seen Fernandinho in there for large chunks of it. That for me has been an absolute must signing for Manchester City. As good as Suarez has been, when everybody, a lot of people were writing him off, he's too heavy, he's too this, he's too slow, he can't do it anymore, then he, you know, throws that cake in people's face. But as you know, Ruben Dias, or also known to a colleague of ours as Bruno Dias, has been immense.
However, I suppose, Craig, the argument is that Manchester City maybe could have won the title without Ruben Dias. Atleti wouldn't have won the title without Luis Suarez.
Yeah, and if you're trying to make an argument, I couldn't give a toss. I've already given you my answer, I'm not changing it.
I wasn't looking for you to change your mind. I was just suggesting if you were to put together...
I think you may have been... Well, you may have been trying to finagle it down a different road, as you will try and do, because you're bored and it's a Saturday and there's no real big stories today. But as I often say to you in this show, you can go and get stuffed.
Gab, my finagling aside, where do you go with this?
Look, Luis Suarez is, in terms of a story, Luis Suarez is the bigger signing because he left Barcelona. But equally, I kind of think, you know, when he moved, most people thought, all right, he's not going to be a complete dud. If he has a bad season, he'll score 12 or 15 goals for Atletico Madrid, and he'll provide some garra, some leadership and whatever. And, you know, he isn't the reason Atleti won the title this season. I think there were a bunch of other factors in the mix. What sets Ruben Dias apart for me, and sure, City might still have won the Premier League, although I'm not sure they would reach the Champions League final without Ruben Dias, is the fact that he kind of came out of nowhere. You know, in the sense, obviously, he moves from Portugal, where, you know, he was a good player, but he was 22. Nobody expected him to come and dominate. And yet he comes in, and he dominates straight away. and he makes the players around him better. I think he played a big part in John Stones regaining his mojo, for example. So for me, I would lean Ruben Dias because, you know, there was always the fairy tale element to Luis Suarez.
What about Suarez FaceTiming his family, Dias, crying his eyes out today, Gab?
Like I said, as a story, yeah, sure, it's Luis Suarez. And, you know, you can chuck in his Italian exam as well and,
yes,
you know, all the other stuff and Messi and the Bureau facts and whatever. Yeah, as a story, sure. But when you break it down objectively, I think I might lean Ruben Dias. But who cares? They're two tremendous stories, right?
Yep. This is a random question, Craig. Would you rather go golfing with Harry Kane, Gareth Bale, or Gary Neville?
Oh my God. That's a very random question.
It is.
Why do I want to go golfing with any of them?
Why?
Why would I want to go golfing with any of them?
I don't know. You choose to go golfing with Stevie, so let's be honest. The standard's not that high.
I mean, I'm not. I'll golf with anybody, as you know, but I. Who would I like to. I'm not bothered, really. I would say. I'll say Gareth Bale, because if he plays that much golf, if he plays as much golf as people say he plays, then he's got to be half decent at it. So I'd go with him, and then to see if his fruits of labour are paying off, shall we say.
Final question, Craig. United have more than 66 points. Were they better this season, or the other teams equally bad?
No, they were better this season, only just. But Liverpool imploded because of injuries. And City got it done on one leg with an arm tie behind the back and a blindfold on in the end. So if second place is good enough, with a few more points, a few more cookies thrown in, then fine. But they were better from a low bar. But they're still short of the 81 points that Mourinho tallied up for them when they finished second.
Ah.
Okay?
There we go.
So you should remember that.
We'll dig in. That's it. Thank you very much. You can go and watch the golf now, Craig. Gab, you can go and watch Eurovision. We will be back tomorrow.
The conference.
Sorry?
He's going to watch the. He's going to go and start an early article on the UEFA conference.
No, he's going to go. It's Eurovision tonight, isn't it? Gab loves Eurovision. He's going to get all dressed up, sparkle.
Absolutely. Is that still going?
It's still going. 65 years of that rubbish. People like Gab.
65 years, Craig.
65.
Yep. 65 years. No one knows what
it's older than Stevie,
years
man.
Of that guff.
Yes, I know. Right, that's it. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about, of course, who finished in the top four in both England and Italy.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.